Aloha, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Jeremy Vaney, and you are listening to The Experience. And soon, you'll be listening to my friend Tina Senna for what I thought was going to be a fairly simple, sort of concise episode about a werewolf experience she had. But this actually becomes even more of a mind-blowing sort of open question of what the heck's going on. And in my head as I'm going along, I'm even connecting it back to some things that Sean had said and in last week's episode, which I'll be talking about in a future episode. But for now, if you're wondering who is Tina Senna, well, I've known her for a good number of years. I consider her a friend, and I knew her as a blogger for all things paranormal, and someone who was a voice who wasn't a voice like you would hear on the radio or necessarily read in a magazine, but somehow everybody knew who she was. She was like, well, I guess she did write for Tim Banal's Banal of America website, so probably that's where people knew her from. But to me, she was that person in the background, but who had a following anyway. Kind of, you know, this online enigma all to her own. But now she's branching out with a podcast of her own called The Cauldron Cast, which focuses on the paranormal and true crime. And I think it's great. It's a cast of all women talking about these issues from a female perspective and from a non-white perspective as well. I mean, they don't advertise that, but that's true. Which I think both of those voices are sorely lacking in ufology and in the paranormal research world at large. And I know people who have been on this show, women who have been on The Experience, have asked me if I knew of any female-centered programming on these issues. And I couldn't think of any. But now I got one. The Cauldron Cast. Check it out wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, in a bit of self-promotion, I don't know if you've heard or not, but I'm probably just going to say it in every episode, I wrote a new book called I Am to Tell You This and I Am to Tell You It Is Fiction. And I think you need to go buy it. You can buy it in paperback or for the Kindle at Amazon. And the reason I say that is twofold. One, I may never write about these paranormal things again, at least in book form. This might be it for me. Also, there's nothing else like this book out there at all. In all of alien abduction research from the beginning of time. So there you go. Not in format, not in content, not in humor, not in seriousness. You're not going to find this book anywhere else. It's just this one book. So I feel, taking me out of the equation, if that's even possible, isn't it important to support that type of voice, to support uniqueness, to support new ways of viewing these subjects that aren't the same old, same old? I mean, really, we talk about wanting the new, wanting to revitalize a stale, sort of dead or dying topic of research and what should be topic of all sorts of things, philosophy, sociology. But then when somebody comes along who actually writes that book or does that podcast, in this case, yours truly, it largely goes ignored, which isn't to say that people aren't buying the book and people aren't listening to this because here you are, but you know, I ain't on the radio, right? I'm not, going to be published by a big book publisher. I'm just me. I'm just one little guy. But a little guy with a roaring voice in this case, in the case of I Am to Tell You This and I Am to Tell You It Is Fiction. So why not put your money where your mouth is and support the very type of thing you've probably been waiting to come along for years? I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how to say that, how to sell that to you without realizing that I'm selling that to you because I wrote it. But I just think that if I were... well, I know that I've done this. I know that I've gone out and I've bought and supported voices that even if I, and I'm not saying you should do this with this book, but even if I didn't particularly care about the topic, but I thought the voice was unique enough or whatever, I mean, if I just wanted to support that aspect of it, I would do that. And then read it and then fall in love with it, hopefully. So go do that. And if you have read it, I beg you, I implore you to please review it on Amazon, because unfortunately, although when asked to a person, we will say, reviews don't sway my opinion. I am my own person and I just buy the things that interest me. That's not true. Unfortunately, we are all hypnotized by anonymous reviewers on Amazon and form our purchasing habits accordingly. So please, if you have read it, please leave a review. And if you're going to leave a review, I mean, what the heck, since I'm being completely selfish here, if you're going to leave a review, if you don't like the book, please leave a constructive criticism, because I'd love to know what I could do better in the future with anything that I write. You know, that's always good. Or barring that, I can read what your criticism is and think to myself, nah, you're wrong. Which is probably more likely, because that's what happens when you're a narcissistic writer. So support narcissism, support writing. I am to tell you this, and I am to tell you it is fiction, is a one-of-a-kind experience. As is, hopefully, the experience. And as is, hopefully, our experience with Tina Senna coming right now. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome to the show my friend, my pal, my buddy, Tina Senna. Yay!
Hello, everyone. How are you?
That was me being the audience, cheering you on.
Awesome. I missed you. I haven't talked to you in forever.
I miss you as well. I know that this is the problem of living half a world away.
That's very true.
So I don't even remember where I know I've interviewed you, but I don't remember if it was for this show or Paratopia. Do you remember?
I think it was honestly from when you did the other show. I can't remember right now, but when you did that sideshow, oh my God. It was so long ago. It okay. was, what's the other one you do on the side? You and,
There was, the Black Friday show. There was Culture
nope,
of Contact.
It was the other one.
Oh, boy. I've done a lot of shows.
Dang it.
I've done 10 shows.
You've done a lot of shows.
I'm the James Brown of podcasting. Awesome, it's crazy.
Podcast king, so, you know?
Well, good. Since we haven't done this show, and since it's Halloween, actually, your story, I want to talk about a whole bunch of stuff with you, but maybe your sort of paranormal story is apropos for the month, for the month of Halloween, because I've never heard anything
no
like
problem.
It.
No problem, yeah,
so
yeah.
So let's rehash. Tell everyone what happened to you.
Yeah. Which story do you want to hear? I have plenty. Which one are you talking about specifically?
Oh.
Is it the werewolf story?
Yes.
Or a random story?
No, the werewolf story. Yeah. I didn't want to spoil it, but yes.
Yeah, so for anyone who's listening, I actually had a werewolf encounter. It's not an exaggeration. It was literally something, a propos of, I don't know, not saying Hollywood kind of, you know, werewolf more akin to something closer to, like, I don't know if anyone's ever seen the movie Dog Soldiers, but it was something similar to that. So what happened was at the time, I was a student at UMass Boston, and I was leaving for the night, and I was coming home. It was about 8 or 9 p.m., and I was just walking down the street. I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to give away the location, but I have something to add to the location after the fact, which is very interesting. But I was walking down the street. It was a quiet residential area, and I'm walking down the street minding my business. I have a bag on my shoulder, and all of a sudden, all the houses just completely go dark. And the only way I could describe it is something similar to Stranger Things. The upside down, where one minute all the lights are on porches, people are coming out of their cars, people are just going into their houses, but all of a sudden everything went dark. So it's like the whole street was dead, and I remember noticing that the street went dead. So So when it happened, I looked down the street and I'm like, what happened? Like, all the lights went out. The street was completely empty. And I'm walking towards this church that's on my right-hand side. And I'm like, suddenly I'm feeling like static in the air. Everything's getting quiet. And all of a sudden my ears stop popping. And I'm like, oh my God, something's about to happen. And the only reason I thought something was going to happen is because it was something similar to when I used to have sleep paralysis, where all of a sudden everything would go quiet. You'd hear these weird random noises. Your ears would stop popping. And so I'm like, oh my God, something's going to, you know, something really bad is going to happen. So I'm walking up. I look towards the church because I'm like, okay, if something bad is happening, this is a church. Something bad shouldn't be happening at the church. But it's my mistake. Because I looked towards the church and I noticed that there was a tall kind of like, they didn't cut the grass low. So they had really high, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, they really didn't have anyone doing landscaping. So they had really tall trees going from the right hand side of the street all the way down through the front of the church. So I looked towards the front where they had long bushes, and all of a sudden the bushes part and literally like your figurative, like kind of werewolf peeks out from the bushes and looks right at me. And I'm hearing, you know, the fuzzing in my ears, the humming, the buzzing towards my ears and the silence. And I'm looking at this one werewolf and he's got the snout and he's got like a torn shirt on. He's parting I don't know how to explain it because it wasn't really like, trees or bushes. It was more like, weeds. So he's parting the weeds and he's looking right at me and he's just growling at me and he has like the long teeth. And it was, I swear to you all, like I'm not exaggerating, it was literally like watching the Wolfman. And so he's looking at me, his eyes are like reddish orange and he's staring at me. He doesn't do anything to me, he just looks at me. And by the time I'm looking at him, I'm realizing, oh my God, I'm looking at a werewolf because there's nothing else. There's no other description. This man has talons. He's separating the bushes. He has a long snout. He's got the open mouth. He's like the saliva is pouring out of his teeth and he's just staring at me. And I'm like, this is literally a werewolf. So I'm staring at him. I get scared. I'm like, I should run. And when I get the urge to run and I start running towards the street, all of a sudden I'm running down the street. I don't remember anything that prior to running. I just remember looking at him and I remember running. And when I get down the street, I look back. I turn to see if he's following me. And all of a sudden, the street lights are on. People are walking from their cars to the street. It's like a whole nother street. Whatever I saw is gone. Like, there's no darkness. There is no longer dark patios. There's no longer dark like, you know, porches. There's all of a sudden, it's lively. It's like people walking up to their porches like normal. The bushes are closed. There's no werewolf. And my purse is sitting in the middle of the street. So I'm telling myself, should I run back and get my purse? So I run back and get my purse. I don't know what happened. So I run back. I grab my purse in the middle of the road. And I run all the way home. And when I get home, I tell my mom and my sister, I said, I saw a werewolf. And they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, I swear to God, I saw a werewolf. He parted the bushes. He looked at me. And I really saw, like, the literal, like, Hollywood werewolf. Like, he had the snout. He had the torn shirt. He had the talons. He had, like, the disheveled hair. And he was staring at me. And the entire street was dead. No one was on the street. And I left my purse in the middle of the street. And my mom was like, well, you know, maybe you saw, like, you know, someone I'm playing around with you. But my sister, who had actually seen a werewolf like years ago when we were kids, she actually had a werewolf encounter where she ran from my grandmother's house to my house. She looked at me dead in my face and said, I believe you, because she literally had a werewolf encounter. And when we were kids, she was like 8 years old. I was 10. And I was like, oh my God, you didn't see a werewolf. You just saw a crazy guy. And she was like, no, I saw a werewolf. It was across the street. It was telling me to come to it. So because of that situation, that experience, she really, like, looked at me and she said, I believe you. So ever since then, I've told people have told me, oh, no, it's just like maybe you were abducted and it's like a screen memory, or maybe you were just tired. But I'm like, I can't find anything to explain why me randomly coming from UMass Boston on the train, minding my business at 7 o'clock at night, why I would see this, you know, being this creature that was kind of like a skinwalker. And so a few years went by and I connected with an old teacher. He goes to my job now. He remembers me. He's like 80. He's in his 80s, late 80s, early 90s. And he used to look up when we used to tell him scary stories about our, you know, our area, our street and our house. And he was like, yeah, skinwalkers, that whole area around Codman. It really was like there was a mound there, and the natives really believed there were skinwalkers, so maybe you saw a skinwalker. So the entire time, as an adult, I'm like, did I see a skinwalker? Did I see, like, a crazed crackhead? Did I see a werewolf? I don't know what I saw, but I can tell you, like, 100%, like, after I saw the movie Dog Soldiers, it was legitimately, like, a werewolf from the movie Dog Soldiers. And I know it sounds crazy, but I swear to anyone listening, it was 100,000,000,000% like a werewolf just peering at me from the woods and like through the trees and through the bushes and looking right at me. And I don't know how to explain it. I'm honestly, no matter what anyone says, I am a skeptic. So I always think about to this day, like, what did I do? Like, what was the situation? Like, what did I actually see? Because this being literally was like, the old school Hollywood version of a werewolf. I can't explain it. I really cannot explain it.
Yeah, well, you've come to the right place because no one here is going to not believe you. So
yeah.
So that's good. But this is interesting because we've all heard in terms of at least UFO sightings, maybe even some ghostly type things and some so-called alien abduction type things. Associated with that sound that you're talking about, that you sort of got in your ears, but you associated it with sleep paralysis, which you've had before. Do you remember when you had sleep paralysis? Did you have a vision with that?
Every time I've had sleep paralysis, honestly, I've had some weird vision. Recently, it's funny because you're asking me this. I want to tell you that recently, about 2 weeks ago, I had a really bad sleep paralysis incident where something was in the corner of my room. No exaggeration, and it felt like it was doing, I don't know how to say this without being disgusting, but it was like it was pleasuring itself. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, of course it makes sense.
Yeah, it was a being like that. So so the best way I can explain is that I was in my bed. I was aware that something was in the corner of my room, but I sleep with a sleep mask on, so when I sense something is in my room, I don't look at it because I sleep with a sleep mask on purpose so I don't have to see it. And something was in my room literally breathing like in beat as if it was doing something to itself. So it was like it was doing something. And I heard it and I'm like, I'm not looking at it. I'm not going to take this off my face. I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to recognize it. I'm not going to give it attention. But something is literally in the corner of my room doing that to itself. And so when I said it was akin to having sleep paralysis, the situation with the skinwalker slash entity that might have been like a werewolf or not, it was basically what you have is your ears stop popping. It feels like the pressure is going down in the area, but I was on the street, which is very weird. And you start to hear like fizzing, like as if you were had a TV on. And I know you're the same age I am, so you know what I'm talking about when, like, a television starts to go off and the channel and the station is gone and it's just nothing but static.
Right.
And so, yeah, exactly. So my ears started popping, silence, and then there was static, like a TV static going through my ears. And the only, like I said, the only time that's ever happened to me was sleep paralysis. And I had one situation with the bees. I always like kind of attribute it to bees, where I had a situation where I was floating off my bed where bees were flying by my room, and it was the same thing. It was this kind of, you know, your ears stop popping, there's silence, there's like this shh, and then all of a sudden you hear like the static from a TV. And it was similar to that. The incident I had with my window with the bees flying by is the same thing as that incident with the werewolves. And I know,
were there like actual
said,
bees or no?
Yeah. No, they were just, you could hear bees buzzing by my window.
Okay.
but I had the screen. It's I live in the Northeast, so you know how we always have the storm window down.
Yeah.
And so it was like bees flying, buzzing by my window, like they were buzzing by my window, and all of a sudden I heard that shh, and then I felt the tap on the back of my neck. And when I feel that cold tap on the back of my neck, I know they're in my room. And then I'm floating off my bed, floating. I can feel like my bed just, like, first I'm sleeping on my pillow and my, you know, my mattress. Then all of a sudden I don't feel nothing underneath me. And, I know it's ridiculous to some people, but I say the Our Father prayer, the prayer. And I started saying, Our Father who art in heaven. And then I literally fell down back onto my bed and I could feel my bed bump like against my body. And that was the last time I heard the same kind of the static and the buzzing that happened to me, which was similar to the werewolf incident. And I say werewolf, I know it's ridiculous to some people, like, oh, haha, werewolf. And a lot of people talk about dog, you know, the dog men or whatever. But I'm going to tell you honestly, I do not know what it was. To me personally, as a fan of horror films, I literally can only ascribe it to something similar to dog soldiers or like a werewolf in London or something, because it was literally, or more honestly, let's say Kate, what's her name, the werewolf slash the vampire films that she does, those werewolves kind of look similar to what I saw. But I always say dog soldiers because they really were, the thing in the trees really was more similar to the werewolf and dog soldiers than anything else I've ever seen. It was really like that. It was about,
I believe you're referring
tall
to Underworld.
It was parting the trees. Yes, Underworld. Thank you very much. I couldn't think of it right now. But Underworld and dog soldiers, a mix between those two is similar to the entity that I saw in the bushes, honestly.
Okay. Well, the thing that's, I mean, it's believable to me. I mean, it's not believable. And the thing that makes it believable doesn't rest to me on what the entity is that you saw, but all the surrounding stuff. I mean, I find it fascinating that you could plug in an alien. You could plug in a ghost, an alien of any description, right? We've heard these types of stories before. And so what is it that's going on? Because I know that you, at least last I knew, I don't know, maybe you've changed how you think about these things, but I'm pretty sure I remember you actually do believe in sort of nuts and bolts alien as opposed to any of the other sort of, you know, trickster or any other sort of thing. Is that right? You believe that there are aliens and they're here and they're abducting people?
I do, but the older I've become, the more I believe that they're actually, it's kind of complicated. I've actually, so I have a separate podcast, and we're going to talk about this more elaboratively, but I really believe that whatever we're dealing with is akin to gods who are tricksters who can basically manifest in as different beings. And I know it's crazy to other people, but I really believe that this old belief that has transcended through time and space of gods, 12 gods, however many gods, I believe that the gods who no one believes in, who no one actually understands or knows their names or whatever, they just come back to F with us. And I think that, not saying that extraterrestrials do not exist, because I really think they do, but I think whatever is messing with us is more akin to like old ancient beings who just want attention. And the only reason I say that is because I've had experiences where I really truly believe that whatever was screwing with me just wanted me to be scared so that it would increase its ability to mess with me more. And I feel like if you're a nuts and bolts extraterrestrial coming from another planet, you don't need anyone to be scared of you. You don't need to feed off of fear. You're just like an organic being coming from another planet on some starship or whatever. And so if you're going to feed off of our fear, it's something else altogether. And
right.
I know that's confusing for some people, but I really think there's two different things we're dealing with. We're either dealing with nuts and bolts extraterrestrials who are coming from another world, whether their world is destroyed, whether their world is old, whether they've left their world a long time ago and they're lost, and they're on some generation ship, and they're just coming to a world that's existing like ours, and then trying to find some place to live. God bless them. You know, I understand they're refugees, but I actually think what we're dealing with is trickster entities that have been around for millions, even if billions of years, and the only way they can feed on us or get any kind of existence or attention is if they mess with us. And I really truly believe that's two different things. And I think that what I've dealt with through the years, growing up in a haunted house and being an adult and ignoring these things, is I'm not dealing with nuts and bolts extraterrestrials. I'm dealing with bullcrap that pretends to be demons, pretends to be ghosts, pretends to be whatever, so we can pay attention to it, if that makes sense to you.
You know? I think it's actually as good a theory as any, really, and actually a better theory than aliens. Because, I mean, my question was going to be, if you believed still in nuts and bolts aliens, then how do we consider the fact that this werewolf, all the surrounding stuff sounds exactly like something an abductee might say, or somebody who's seen a ghost might say? I mean, how are they all interacting in the same way that transforms the environment, that transforms at least your sense of the environment and all of that? I mean, to me, having a singular intelligence pretending to be a bunch of different things makes sense in however that plays out. But let me ask you, when you were in the street and you were running and there were people, were they looking at you like you're crazy, or did they not know that you were there? I mean, do you have the sense that they were there all along?
That's a funny thing, because when it happened, as I was saying, the street went dark. So as I'm walking up the street before the situation happened, I'm walking up the street, there's normal people, they're coming out of their cars, they're going up to their porches, they're going in their homes, there's lights coming on in the street, everything's normal. When I get up to that point where I encountered this being, I turn back, the street is dark. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that it was a whole different situation. The street was dark, no people, no cars driving up the street, no lights on the porches. It was as if I went to, that's why I was trying to tell you, it was more like the upside down in Stranger Things.
Right.
Because it was literally like I walked into another dimension. It was not the same place. And so when I ran down the street and I realized what was happening, and I ran and I got to the square, because it's called the square. I don't want to say the name of the square, but it's a famous name of a famous person who founded that area. And it's called a square. And when I look down from the square, all of a sudden, it's normal. People are coming out of their cars. The street lights are on. There's porches are lit. It looks normal. So that's why when I first told you, I remember talking to you about this encounter a long time ago, and I was trying to tell you, it was like it was a whole different street. I don't know how to explain it other than it was one street, and then it reversed back to the original street. I don't know how to explain it. It was two different things to me.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is, when it comes back to normal, are people staring at you? Like, you're running down the street like a madwoman, and you've left your purse in the middle of the road. Do people notice this, or are they just sort of going about their day?
Jeremy, to be honest, when I ran down the street to get my bag, I still remember the bag. It was a Coach bag. It was a shoulder bag. It had the 4 feet on the bottom. I loved that bag. I still remember that bag to this day. I remember running down the street to get that bag, and the bag was sitting upright. And this is a purse that, it wasn't built to sit upright. It's a purse that would, like, kind of fold over. And when I ran down the street to get my purse, because all I'm thinking is, oh, shit, I have to go get my purse. I have my ID in it. I have my bank card, whatever, whatever. When I run down to get my purse, it's sitting upright like it's stiff, and no one is noticing me. I don't see, I can tell you with 1,000,000% honesty, I do not recollect anyone on that street ever noticing me, ever noticing me run for my bag, ever noticing me pick up my bag, ever notice anything. I do not recall anyone talking to me, looking at me strangely, saying anything to me. That's why I always say I feel like it was another dimension, because the people on that street did not even, like, pay me any attention. I'm so serious. And if you know the area I'm talking about, if you were on that street, you would know that a lot of homeless people literally, they congregate in that square. And the homeless people that were congregating in that square did not even pay me any mind. And that's what bothers me to this day, because if the people there had paid me any money and they were like, oh my God, you were running, or you look scared or whatever, then I would know, oh my God, yeah, something happened. It's the fact that when I grabbed my bag and turned around and ran down that street, the homeless people in that square paid me no mind. So it was like as if nothing, they didn't notice anything out of, they didn't notice anything. It was just me. I never had anyone say to me, oh, I saw you running. I saw you grab your bag. Nothing. It was like the homeless people didn't even notice me. It was so weird.
This is interesting because this will be the second show of the reboot of the experience. And on last week's episode at this point, we will have listened to Sean, who had been on before, because essentially he had driven by a cornfield, you know, near his house. That was always a giant farmer's cornfield. And he drove by, it was a cornfield. The next day he drove by, it was a soybean field. And it was a soybean field from then on, which makes no sense. And then more recently, he's having these sort of what he considers to be, I don't know what, time slips. Or so he'll be driving in one place and then suddenly he's on the, you know, complete opposite side of a roundabout, like not even near his exit. And like this happens several times. And then it seems to be related to something personal that happens later. Like it seems to be a bunch of synchronistic events that lead up to him needing to tell someone something. And so it's interesting that this kind of has that same flavor in a way. Well, I guess I wasn't going to ask this, but I'll ask you, did this lead up to any, like, could this be recontextualized that you can remember into you needing to make contact with somebody about something later?
It didn't happen as in me needing to tell anyone anything, but it's funny that you asked that because recently I was talking to, so we have a separate podcast, and I was telling the women I have a podcast with, it's that I have an issue with my birthday numbers, and I really remember my birthday really having some kind of effect on me after that incident, because my sister always says, oh no, they're like your angel numbers or whatever, which I don't believe in, but after that situation, I remember 324 coming up all the time randomly for random things, and I was explaining to, you know, we have a podcast called The Cauldron Cast, and I said to them, I said, I have to really talk about this because for some weird reason, I have an issue with my birthday, and it never used to happen to me before, but I started to remember and look back and think, when did my birthday first start to affect me? And it actually started to come up and show up in places after this weird event. So I find it weird that someone, myself, as I said, as a skeptic who doesn't, when people tell me, oh, your angel numbers, I literally roll my eyes, but 324 comes up for weird synchronicities for me personally because of having this experience. It's just really strange. So no, I don't have any information that I'm supposed to tell to a particular person, but I noticed that after that event, when I see my birthday, I literally know something's going to happen, and it's very strange. So I know it's kind of corny, but it's 1000% truth.
So what about just in terms of this being a time slip or a slip into another dimension or something like that? I mean, what do you think about the what happened there where everything goes dark and everyone disappears? Because clearly you're still there in the town. The town doesn't go to a different age, right? You're not in the 1800s or the 1700s.
I agree.
And you're not in some alternate universe that, you know, that is completely different. It's the same buildings and everything, right? So what do you think? Do you think that, well, maybe you already answered it. Do you think that is specifically for you so that whatever, you know, you're saying these gods or whatever they are connecting with you? Do you think it's specifically, you know, for you? So it's almost, I don't know what, perceptual, but subspace as well? I mean, there seems to be both. It seems to be like there's a perceptual shift, but there's also an environmental shift, or else people would be responding to you when you come back.
It's funny that you say that because, so I wrote an article a long time ago on Banal of an experience I had as a kid, and I really think it kind of harkens back to this experience So when I was a kid, and this is why I believe gods, you know, mess with us. And I know some people listen to this and go, oh my God, gods, whatever. But when I was a kid, I had a lot of experiences in my home where I swear to goodness that I had like three or four, like Roman or Greek gods. I don't know how you want to call them. Zeus, you know, Jupiter, whatever. And other gods would literally show up in my room and they were like floating heads. And I remember the last time I saw them, I was like 9 or 10 years old. I tripped over the threshold in the living room. And I remember Jupiter and I remember Athena and all them floating. And they were telling me, oh, they were telling me to do a specific thing. And I said I wouldn't do it. And they told me, if you do this thing, we're going to give you eternal power and blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. It's bad. And as an adult, I can honestly tell you, I don't remember what they wanted me to do. And I said no, and I fell asleep on that threshold. And I just remember my mom coming by and waking me up. And so as an adult growing up, I'm like, I wonder what they wanted me to do. I wonder if my life would be different if I had listened to them and done what they wanted me to do. And so I've had this idea in the back of my mind that, you know, there's tricks to gods that mess with you and make you do random things. And if you do it, you know, you're basically doing it for their glory or whatever. And so when that situation happened and I came running home and told my mom I saw a werewolf, blah, 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 and my sister was like, I believe you. I remember going to bed that night and I remember dreaming, kind of like a dream slash akin to some kind of like succubus thing, incubus, more like an incubus because I'm a female. And I remember sleeping and I remember something over my bed. It was a female talking over my bed and she was just chattering and I couldn't understand what she was saying. It was like, you know, whatever, like static talking. And I remember waking up in the morning and I literally said when I woke up, I said, the gods must be mad. I swear I remember saying that. The gods must be mad. I said that in the middle of my sleep and I woke up. And so the next morning I was like, oh, that whole werewolf thing that I had, it must have been some crazy some crazy thing where, like, you know, they were messing with me and they wanted me to do something because I woke up in the morning and I said, the gods must be, you know, they're messing with me. The gods are doing some kind of thing. And so ever since then, I've kind of like, for some weird reason, even though I'm telling it to you as a separate incident, in my head, I connect it to things that have happened to me throughout my life as a little kid. And I'm like, it's one of those things that adds up to me thinking that a group of things are always constantly messing with me. I don't know if that makes sense to you. I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it. But it's not like an alternate universe. It's like they're literally trying to target me. But because I'm a chicken, I'm not going to lie. You know Marisol. Marisol will tell you, Tina's a chicken. We go to haunted places all the time, and I'm like, I'm the chicken. I'm the big chicken of the group. And the reason I'm a chicken is because things always bother me. You know what I'm saying? Things follow me. Things happen to me in my sleep or whatever. So I'm the chicken. And I'm the chicken because I swear there's like a group of entities that, whether they are gods or they consider themselves to be gods, whatever they are, they literally like to mess with me. And so it's kind of... I don't think it's an alternate universe thing. I do think they're picking on me specifically. I don't know what my ancestors have done. I know that I had an incident on Facebook where someone just addressed my family as your own witches. You guys do weird things. And I told my grandmother and she's like, yeah, you know, family, people in our family do have, you know, the ability to see things and do things. And I'm like, well, I'm not. I don't like that stuff. I'm a chicken. I don't like to see things. I ignore things. Even when I do see things, I mind my business. I pretend I don't. But I'm just, it makes me wonder if it's just like something trying to get my attention.
But
I am a horror fan, but because to me, I'm trying to desensitize myself. I know it sounds stupid, but to anyone...
I don't think it does sound stupid. Can I just say, let me interrupt this for a second, because I think anyone I've known who's been an experiencer of anything like this, there is the element of fear. And they all, I mean, I guess I'm included in this, seem to love horror movies. And like, I can sit through a horror movie. In fact, my wife Carol is amazed that I can sit there and eat and watch the grossest thing and not be fazed, and she has to like hide her head in her hands and can't watch it kind of thing. And I don't know if I know an experiencer who isn't into sci-fi or, you know, sci-fi horror or just plain horror, but yet talks about these experiences as if they're the scariest, you know, most terrifying thing you could imagine. So, yeah, there is something about, like, exactly, tiptoeing toward the fear in our everyday lives to maybe deal with this thing that gets missed by, for instance, skeptics and debunkers or even psychologists who would say, well, you're fantasy prone, you've watched too many horror movies. It's like, no, the horror movies, for all I know, the horror movies may inform the visuals of this thing that is trying to get us to identify with it, but it's its own intelligence and we're trying to deal with it. I mean, that's it.
Exactly. The horror movies, honestly, I love horror and sci-fi, just like you said. The horror movies make me, okay, I know it's dumb, but when I watch a horror film, it's easy for me to say that's fake because I know it doesn't work that way. So if I'm watching a horror movie where aliens come down and they're eating people or chasing people, I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome because this is stupidity and it doesn't work that way. Because deep down, we know how it really works. So it's like trying to convince ourselves that what we've experienced is not true because the stupidity of it, you know what I mean? Like, you watch a horror movie, you're like, okay, if it happens like this, maybe what I'm thinking happened to me when I was 5 years old is not true. You know, it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's just a way of me trying to convince myself when I watch horror movies that what I experienced or saw is not really real, or it's not going to really bother me because this is the real thing. This is this. If demons come up and look like this and they make, like, I don't know, they clap their hands, like, you know, when you're running around the house trying to play, like, a game or whatever, then the thing that was under my bed that time when I was 8 is not real. I don't know how to explain it, but that's literally how I feel about it because I grew up in a haunted house. I did not learn to sleep with the lights out until I was 28. I am a grown-ass woman, and to this day I have insomnia. I am afraid. I hear voices in my room. I do not like shit like that. I mean, stuff like that, excuse my language. I do not like stuff like that. I am a huge chicken. My best friend and I, we do ghost hunting, and we went to Gettysburg. I ruined the entire experience because I was so scared because I literally saw things jumping up, looking at us, and jumping back down into the grass and hiding. I do not like this stuff. I like it when you get the thrill and nothing happens, but I do not like it when I actually see and experience and see things. I've seen things at my job. I've had literal 8-foot-tall beings walk at me in my job, and I've turned around thinking it was my boss, and there's nothing there. I've had things fly at me, and it's just, I no matter where I go and what I do, I've seen my dead grandfather literally peer from a room and look at me and tell me to come here. It's just, I don't know what to do about this. I don't want any attention for it. It's not to get attention. It's not to feel special. It's crap that scares that crap out of you. It's things you don't even know what they are. You don't know where they come from. You don't know why they mess with you. They don't know. You don't know why they pick you, but they're there. And what can I do about it other than find people who understand me, who experience the same thing? I can't do nothing about it. No matter what, I cannot do nothing about it. I can go 3-4 months with normalcy, nothing happening, and then one night I'm sleeping in my bed and I get tired and I have to use the bathroom, and I look up and there's a man standing at my bed. Like, what can you do about it? Yeah. You can't do anything about it. And yeah, and you have skeptics saying all the time, oh, this stuff is in your head. But if I'm wide awake and I'm literally stepping out of my bed to go to the bathroom, and a hat man, which I've seen plenty of times, a man with a fedora is standing in front of my bed with a jacket on looking at me, what explanation do I have for that?
Shema,
like,
Tina.
I don't have an explanation for what he is. Exactly.
I think you do, Tina. Shimon.
Shimon.
It's not a hat man. It's me, Michael.
It's Michael. Michael's standing at my bed. But you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean. You've dealt with the same thing. What can we say to convince these people that we don't want this to happen, but it happens? What are we going to do about it?
Well, so there's nothing. I mean, really. I wanted to ask you, your sister, if you remember, when she saw a werewolf type being, did she describe the same sort of the sound that she, and the atmosphere change and all of that, or was it a completely different circumstance?
It's actually fascinating. She does not want me to talk about these things. She gets really scared. She says, stop talking about it. But from what I remember from her description, she said it looked like a man who had dreadlocks. He had really reddish yellow eyes. He had fangs. He had talons. And he was telling her to, he was across the street. So the way it was is that, she was running from my grandmother's house. My grandfather was alive at the time. And so she was at my grandparents' house. She was running to, we have the way our house is separated, the family house, is that it was a one family, but it got separated into two different sides. So my grandparents were on the left, my mom and everyone else was on the right. So she's running from the left side of the yard to the right side of the yard. And he was standing across the street, and he had this long talon. He had the fangs and everything, and he's literally, like, beckoning her to come to him, and she's freaking out. She's ringing a bell for my mom to open the door, and she said he was like a werewolf. She said he had, like, the eyes, he had the teeth, he had the talons and everything, but he had dreadlocks. So her description is not like mine. My werewolf did not have dreadlocks or anything like that, but she said she ran in the house. She was freaking out. She kept telling me, look out the window, look out the window. He's across the street. And I remember being in my bed and looking across the street, and I didn't see anyone, but we stayed up the entire night because we thought he was going to come back and that he would go across the street and that I would be able to see what she was talking about. And I never saw him for myself. So I'm only going by what she told me. She was about 6 years old, and what she described it as was a man with dreadlocks, with talons and long, elongated teeth and, like, yellow-red eyes. And she said he was a werewolf.
Okay.
And he was basically telling her, yeah.
Do you get the sense that your mother knows about this stuff in your family and is trying to protect you from it, or do you think that she just doesn't believe any of it?
I think my mom doesn't believe, because I remember an incident where my sister and I, so we had a family friend who died. He was murdered. And my sister, my brother, and I, we were in the room. We're like, yeah, whoever killed you, come tell us. And my mom's bedroom door started creaking open, and it was a blue white light. It was like it bathed us in light, and he was coming through the door. Jeremy, I'm not exaggerating. This really happened. And he was coming out to tell, we know he was coming to tell us because this is a dead person coming out the door. But I got so scared. We were all so scared. My sister kept saying, turn on the light, turn on the light. And I'm frozen, and my brother's screaming. And so I jumped up finally, and I put on the light, and the door was shut, as if it was never opened, never moved, no light, nothing. And I remember my mom busting the door open and going, you guys got to stop in here. My mom and my sister was like, we saw him coming. He was coming to tell us who killed him and blah, blah, blah. And my mom, we got in trouble with my mother. We were on punishment and everything. It was the middle of the night. So I don't think my mom believes any of that stuff. But I just remember us saying to him, if you know who killed you, come tell us. And I swear to this day, no exaggeration, no lie, he was coming out of a blue white light to come and tell us. He was literally a dead person coming out of this light to come in, and he was literally coming to us. And we got scared. We were kids. And when we told my mom that, she looked at us like she kind of believed us, because it was three of us telling the same story. But at the same time, she was mad at us for trying to do that, because you don't summon things. You don't do that. And so I wouldn't say my mom, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I don't want to say my mom doesn't believe. I just think my mom is afraid of those things, so she would appreciate it if you didn't, like, kind of involve her, is the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just sad that that's that one guy's chance.
He couldn't
manifest at any other point, like, later on in life and be like, remember me?
I'm here to tell you. No. It was scary. And let me tell you, to this day, my sister and I remember that experience like it was yesterday, but my brother, literally, he completely, like, washed that scenario. Like, he doesn't even remember it. He was on the top bunk and freaking out, and to this day, if you ask him, he's like, I don't remember nothing. But my sister and I, we remember the door opening. We remember the white, blue light pierced, like, coming across the room. We remember seeing the the silhouette of the body coming out of it. My sister and I remember everything, but my brother has completely erased it from his memory.
Does he remember any paranormal events?
He remembers when Freddy Krueger lived in our house, which is another story if you want to hear that, which is crazy.
Sure,
but he remembers Freddy Krueger.
Okay, so it's not as though he's like, because you do hear this, and I feel like I've had this in my family of family members or just friends or whatever completely blocking out events as if,
yep.
It, almost as if, again, it's like being puppet mastered or something, like this isn't for them, it's for you. But maybe in a lot of cases, it really is just traumatic events. I'm blocking it out. I'm going on with life. And if he does remember some other things like Freddy Krueger, then that's something. So what was the Freddy Krueger thing?
So me separately, my mom and my stepbrother, they would go out to parties and whatnot, and my grandparents would watch me and my sister, and my brother was, like, really young at the time. And so me, from my end, I remember I would stay home. My sister would go to my grandparents, and I would say, oh, no, I'm staying home. And I would lay on the bed, and I just remember Freddy Krueger would just walk through the kitchen, like, from the kitchen, come into the... There was like a hallway outside my mom's room, and it was the hallway led to the bathroom. And Freddy Krueger would come from that hall from the kitchen, stand in front of the bathroom, and he would just wave his hand at me with all the knives. And I would just freak the F out. I would freak out so bad. I'd be like, oh my God, Freddy Krueger's going to kill me. I have to leave all the lights on because he can't make it from the darkness of the hall to me because I have the light on in the bedroom. And so I thought it was just me. I literally, all these years, thought it was just me. And then all of a sudden, randomly, my brother developed this fear of Freddy Krueger. And he would sleep at the foot of my mother's bed. He would tell my mother, Freddy Krueger messes with him. He sees Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger's coming for him. So I started to realize, as I got, into my late teens, early 20s, whatever was manifesting to me as Freddy Krueger was manifesting to my brother as Freddy Krueger. Because we didn't confer with each other. I didn't say to my brother, oh my God, I see Freddy Krueger. We didn't have the same story. I never told him I see Freddy Krueger when I'm home alone. There's no reason for my brother to know that I saw Freddy Krueger. But for some weird reason, me seeing Freddy Krueger stop in front of the bathroom door and like flash his hands at me, with the knives.
Yeah.
My brother started seeing the same thing. So it was like something, whatever it was literally coming to us as the same thing. And it was too, I swear to you, I never, never, never told my brother that I saw that thing as Freddy Krueger, but my brother had a fear for years of Freddy Krueger. So what that tells you, how would we both have the same exact fear of the same thing when I never said to my brother, oh my God, I'm scared of Freddy Krueger, I see Freddy Krueger. I never said that. I never told him any of that.
Right.
You know?
Well, and so this is in what you're saying was a haunted house that you grew up in, right?
Yes, definitely.
So,
1,000,000,000,000%.
Okay, so when I say that you say you grew up in haunted house, what I mean by that,
yep,
isn't that it wasn't haunted, but that it seems as though everything's haunted, right? Like you just saw something last week, or you just had the feeling of a presence last week in your room. So are you really, did you grow up in a haunted house, or are you a haunted person? Are you a haunted family, if you want to put haunted in quotes? I guess that's the question. I mean, was there something specifically special about this house that made it haunted?
Yes, I believe it's the house, and I'll tell you why. Because my aunts, my uncles, my grandparents, everyone has experienced something in this house. The house I'm showing you the ceiling of right now, it's this house. So my uncles and my godmother, they lived upstairs. So the ceiling you see right now belongs to upstairs. My godmother literally, when she wasn't home, my uncles would go up there because her light bulbs would always burst. And so my uncles went up there one time, and there was footprints running across the floor, and they could see it. They could see the footprints, so they ran out the door because they were freaked out. And so when I was a kid and my other aunt and her son lived up there, I remember we used to have to take turns to spend the night with him because he was scared to sleep by himself. He was afraid to sleep by himself. So, I remember one night I stayed with him, and, I remember hearing like a squeaking sound, like a weird squeaking sound. And he was asleep. His mom was asleep. We were sleeping at the foot of her bed. And I woke up and I looked to see where the squeaking sound was. And there was a person sitting at the bar, twisting the chair, looking at me, and this person was literally moving. They were, like, spinning the chair, looking at me, squeaking the chair. No one else lived up there. It was just her and her son. And I'm watching this entity, like, move the chair. And so I freaked out. I literally don't remember what happened. I remember falling asleep. I just don't remember anything else other than getting scared and falling asleep. And so it was like a lot of crazy things happened up there. Then I remember an uncle running out from the basement at one time, and everyone made fun of him because he said he got chased from the basement. And my grandparents went down to the basement to see what was there because he swore to God that something chased him out of the basement. When my grandfather died, things weren't as bad. We felt like he was a good energy in the house. Everyone said it, but people would see like a shadow run across the basement. And it didn't scare them because they figured it was my grandfather, but they really were like, oh, there's something in the basement. And when my father died before my grandfather died. And I remember one time I lived with my grandmother at the time, and I went up there and I saw my father, my dead father, my father who died. Okay, people, so you can all understand that I'm not exaggerating. My dead father walked from one bedroom, came onto the hall, looked at me, and walked into the other bedroom. Literally looked at me and walked into the other bedroom. This is not an exaggeration. Like, and I ran down the stairs. I literally, like, tripped down the stairs, slid down the stairs, ran to the kitchen and told my grandmother, like, I saw something upstairs, but I didn't tell her it was my father. But it was my father who walked from one bedroom, looked at me, and turned around and walked into another. So I feel like it's the house itself. It's not people. It's the actual house.
Wow. So let me ask you, well, first I'll ask you, do you think that the haunted house is related to all the other stuff? I mean, when you're talking about gods sort of vying for your attention, does that include the haunted house?
It's kind of weird because as a kid, I thought it was just ghosts or like weird things in my house. But when I got older, I sort of pieced things together and I was like, I really think, and as ridiculous as it sounds, I really think that the things that always try to attract human attention for, I don't know, like for millennia, things that made people create like false idols and made people do stupid things and worship dumb things, those things show up all the time. I really think they show up all the time. I don't know if they actually are gods, but they could pretend to be, maybe they are, I don't know, but I feel like they mess with people all the time just to feed off of that belief so they can keep on going. And I know it sounds stupid to say that, but the only reason I say is because I remember being a kid and looking under my bed and seeing little things running under my bed and thinking little people lived under my bed. And I remember, like I said, the threshold situation, the Greek gods. And it makes me think that they appear as whatever is in your head, or they pretend to be whatever you're afraid of, or they can look like anything, but at the end of the day, we don't really know what they look like. I think they manifest as whatever they want to manifest as, but I don't think they're aliens. I don't think they're ghosts. I truly 1,000% do not believe they're dead people pretending to be anything. I think they're things that can manifest as whatever they want to, just to get you to be afraid of them or pay attention to them, and they can be whatever they want to be. But at the end of the day, that not any of the things that we call them or name them. And it just, I don't know how else to explain that. Maybe we'd have to like interview millions of people, but from all the stories I've heard and the craziness that people have come up with, I really truly believe that it's not one particular incident. It's not one particular entity. It's not one particular being. I really think it's the culmination of something really ancient pretending to be whatever is in your head. And that's just my perspective.
I'm sure you're familiar with either the show or the I think it was a book series, American Gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that book.
When you think of it, do you think of it as organized like that, an organized bunch of gods living symbiotically with us?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I really think it's just like really pissed off old things that are forgotten that just do their own thing. I'm telling you right now, they do their own thing. It's not a whole group of them like, oh, I'll do this on Tuesday and you do that on Friday. No, It's random random things. I'm sorry, I try not to swear. It's random things doing their own things when they have an opportunity to do it. I really do not think it's organized at all.
Do you think that you could organize it? Like, I'm thinking about how interesting is it that, you know, Carl Jung's brand of psychology has been taught as simply a brand of psychology all these years, when in fact the origin in his Red Book is these extraordinary visionary journeys that he had when he was younger, that he then extrapolated, yep, you know, a sort of psychology or philosophy out of. Do you think that that enters the realm of what you're talking about? Like, if you were to enter into a visionary journey or a bunch of journeys, could you organize and communicate even as an equal with these things in some level?
No. Okay. I'm not going to be like biblical about it, but I know there's a part of the Bible that says we're supposed to be above them. I really truly believe that whatever they are, they're afraid of us, because maybe we are above them. Maybe we can control them, and maybe we've just been desensitized and don't know how to. But I think the fact that we see them, that we experience them or whatever, means that at some point we are symbiotic in some way. But I don't think that we can fully grasp or understand what we're dealing with, because we've been kind of left out from the full understanding and comprehension of these things. And there's a piece missing. I feel like if we had the whole puzzle, we would be like, oh, I know what that is, I know how to deal with it. But there are just certain people who know how to deal with it because they're like part of some weird cult or something. And then there's people who understand where it's coming from because maybe they study that, but the everyday average person has no damn clue, even though the everyday average person, if you go back 5,000 years, always knew how to deal with these things. We're at a loss. We have not been taught that way. We have been not veered in that direction. We've been taught that computers and cell phones and TVs, and we have not been told, okay, when you have these beings, this is how you deal with them. And so because of that, we're lost. We have nightmares. We're afraid. We have ghosts. We have hauntings. We have these stupid, ridiculous explanations for them. But at the end of the day, our ancestors knew what they were, knew how to deal with them, and it's all been some kind of lost knowledge. So I feel like, for me personally, maybe it's stuff that is just should have been normal from the get-go had we not been veered in opposite directions, or had we not been taught or kind of desensitized to certain things. But because we were not taught those things, I feel like I look at it from the perspective of maybe it's possible this stuff should have been in the realm of comprehension, where we would have been able to be like, oh yeah, I know what that is, but this is how I should this is how I should approach it. I don't know how to approach it because we're not that kind of civilization, if that makes sense. We're not the kind of smart civilization that would... We don't have shamans anymore. We don't have medicine women, we don't have those people that literally come to your door and go, this is what you're dealing with and this is what you do. We don't respect the old ways of dealing with these things. We make fun of, we do Hollywood films about, we write books about these things. We think these things are fictional. We disrespect these things, and because of that, we're screwed. And so when people experience these things, we're laughed at, or we're told, oh, it's all in your head, we're gaslighted, and blah, blah, blah. But it's maybe some kind of lateral existence that's always been with us, that we always knew how to deal with. We always knew how to live close to or next to. We knew how to experience it. We knew how to respect it. We knew how to, I don't know, we just knew how to coexist, if that makes sense. And something happened where we just don't coexist with those things. And because of that, I don't have any answers. I don't know why. None of us knows why. We have idiots who go ghost hunting and do TV shows and yell at them and do dumb crap all the time. We have people who take pictures and think they can go write a whole book about the, oh, I know what it's all about, when our ancestors took 5,000 years and still don't know what it's about. And I think it's because of the disconnect of us thinking that we're above and beyond that stuff, when truly, no matter how far we get technologically, there's a alternate world of things that have always coexisted with us that we are just not privy to because we stopped paying attention. And I just don't know if that makes any sense, but I feel like it's not some new thing. It's not like some kind of made up thing. It's not some fictional thing. It's just something that's normal. It's not supernatural. It's natural. It's not paranormal. It's normal. It's something that's always been there that we've been taught to not pay attention to, and so we don't believe it that way.
Wow. Well, I think that is probably the perfect place to leave it, even though I could go another hour talking to you.
I'm so happy I got to talk to you.
Please come back. Please come back and let's pick it up again, because there's a lot more to get to. I mean, even the notion of, we don't have shamans and all that stuff, but those come from those heart cultures, those nature cultures. And really, I think what we're talking about that's really lost is innocence. Because when we say that this happens to kids, and when we talk about like First Nations or even Hawaiians, there's a certain innocence to them that we are missing because we have cut ourselves off from our interconnective nature. You know, we started writing things down in worshiping books and getting all up in our heads and becoming brain people. And so we just are constantly in a sort of a cycle of talking to ourselves. Like we take from our past, we mull it over and we regurgitate it and we project a future based on that past, which is different than having no sense of time.
Exactly.
Or having a grand cyclical sense of time. So these are different ways of being in the world. So we might have made ourselves dysfunctional as a society and then spread that across the world of people who can't actually fully exist in the world as it is anymore.
Exactly.
And then we look at kids who can do it and we're like, oh, kids, they're so innocent. Well, guess what? There used to be adults who were that innocent. There still are, but we just, we don't pay attention to them because we're racist.
Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you for saying that. I was going to say that because the cultures that really do pay attention are being treated like as if they're like less than. So thank you for saying that. You literally hit the nail on the head. I didn't want to get political, but you're 1000% correct. Racism. Exactly.
And on that note, and on that happy note, racism rears its head again.
Yep. Always and forever until we watch them all die off.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they don't wear their COVID masks. I don't know.
I know, right?
I can't believe it. Anyway, Tina, thank you again for doing this. Much appreciated. Where can people find you if they want to seek you out on the internets?
Currently, I am part of the Cauldron Cast, which includes some brilliant women. You can find us on Spotify as the Cauldron Cast. We literally dive into all these topics, and we're trying to give a female perspective on everything, every situation. And so please look us up. We're on, Apple. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. Anywhere you pick up podcasts, the Cauldron Cast. And also, I am on Facebook. But also realize my Facebook is purely comedy. I don't do my Facebook to insult anyone or to my, you know me. Come on. You know me forever. You know that basically I'm just trying to make people laugh. There's too much crap in the world. I don't want to make people upset even more than they already are.
It's true.
I'm stressed out.
If you go to Tina's Facebook page, you'll get a lot of like pop culture jokes and stuff. And if you go to my page, you get that for about 5 seconds, and then I start saying offensive things, and then you're like, who is this guy? And you end up hating me. So you won't feel that way with Tina. Definitely go find her on Facebook, and you might want to just pass me by.
You're not offensive. People should know I've known him forever. He is not offensive. He's just honest. Plain and simple.
Oh, well, there's that. All right, Tina. Thank you again for doing this. And again, I beg you, come back.
I totally will. I missed you. Thank you. I love you, my friend.
And that is all the time we have on this week's The Experience. Thank you again to Tina Senna please go listen to her new podcast, The Cauldron Cast, along with Christy, Casey, Marisol, and Tara. The Cauldron Cast is a paranormal and true crime podcast, so if that floats your boat, go give it a listen. Support them. Also, tune in next week. Jack Brewer will be here to discuss all things Disclosure and various UFO cases from the past. But instead of the usual snore fest that implies to me, I'm going to be taking some different angles and asking some questions about these things that you've never heard and should have by now. So get ready for that. It's certainly going to be a barn burner. Except we're not going to burn a barn, so get that out of your mind. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Beep.